Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Earlier this year, an Oireachtas committee recommended legislating for assisted dying in restricted circumstances for those with just 6 months to live. The measures, if enacted, would also apply to some with just 12 months to live where they're suffering from a neurodegenerative condition. In total, the committee made 38 recommendations to the government, but stopped short of any form of wording for how any future legislation would be framed. Bishop Kevin Doran of Elphin, chair of the Bishops' Council for Life, joins me on the line. Good morning to you, Bishop Doran.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for joining us on this. Now, there is
no doubt
that this whole debate about assisted dying, it raises deeply uncomfortable questions. But at the heart of the proposals, there's an effort to empower individuals to make decisions about their own lives, giving them the autonomy to put an end to their own suffering. If people are in extreme and persistent pain, Bishop Doran, how is it loving and compassionate to force them to endure that?
Well, I think if the best we can do for people who are dying is to help them to put an end to their own lives, I think we've lost our way as a society. I think what we need to be doing is providing enhanced palliative care facilities across the community, both in hospitals and in people's homes. And our experts in palliative care will all tell us that pain is not always about physical pain. Sometimes it's about emotional pain, and that it can be managed. And my own experience as a priest, as a pastor, in caring for people who are seriously ill, is that while the time of terminal illness, you know, in those final months before somebody dies, can be a time of great difficulty both for their families and for themselves, it's also often a time when old hurts are healed and people find inner peace, and when they come to understand themselves better, because it's a very different space in which people live. And that's been my experience with young people and with older people since I began my ministry as a priest in the 1970s, right up to recent weeks.
I was reviewing the Catholic Church position on palliative care, and I just heard you mention it there. Like, some might say the very concept of it accepts that death is happening. It focuses on treatment not to prolong life, we know that, but to make sure that someone is comfortable in their final weeks, days and hours. Is there any conflict there for you in what palliative care does and in what the church believes and accepts?
No, absolutely. I mean, palliative care is I suppose it's a holistic care which includes pain relief. It includes counselling sometimes if it's required, sedation sometimes, but not terminal sedation. In other words, we draw a line at any action that is deliberately intended to actually take the life of the person who is dying.
Mm-hmm. You say...
And you see, go ahead.
Just moving on to another issue. I mean, one of your key fears is that all of this will lead in time, and you say this in the statement, to making assisted dying available to people with intellectual disabilities. But there is no sign of that in what's proposed. So where is your evidence for that? What are you founding that on?
Well, you see, there was, I suppose, you know, in a sense, in the legislation that took place in Ireland a few years ago on abortion, there was no sign of some of the things that have been recommended in most in the last review. You know, these things you know, develop as time goes on, and sometimes people start off with something that they think might, you know, people might buy into. But I mean, the reality is, when you look at places like Netherlands, Belgium, Oregon, and Canada, quite specifically in those places, the initial, what you might call, narrow grounds on which assisted suicide or euthanasia have been approved have been significantly eroded, and people with people on the autistic spectrum, for instance, are very vulnerable to assisted suicide.
But there are safeguards already in what we've heard from the Joint Oireachtas Committee. I mean, they suggest that we start by ratifying the optional protocol to the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. But further to that, then, they say that if there are questions about a person's competence to make this decision, a qualified psychiatrist would be required. You don't accept that that's enough. You still say that this is the thin end of the wedge, do you?
And I suppose the interesting thing about the medical profession generally, and that includes psychiatrists, obviously, is that they don't recommend, on medical grounds, they don't recommend that we go down this path at all. But you'll always find, obviously, a doctor or a psychiatrist who is prepared to sign something. And that has been the case in other jurisdictions, and I don't think we should imagine that it would be any different here. The reality,
I think it's probably fair to say that there are differing views in the medical profession, and we have heard from both sides on this, but not all of the medical profession is opposed to this. I think that's probably the fairest way to put that.
Well, I would think the vast majority are from what we're reading. But then again, healthcare professionals are put under enormous pressure, as they have been in the case of abortion. You know, and assisted suicide, I suppose the proposal that's, or the recommendations that are included in the Oireachtas Committee include the idea that doctor or nurse practitioner must be present throughout the process and must account to the responsible authority. That effectively requires healthcare professionals to act to be part of the ending of the lives of their patients. It's completely inconsistent with the whole meaning and ethos of healthcare.
Okay, well, let's look at this then from a compassionate viewpoint. Let's say you have a family who has a relative who is suffering in dreadful pain. They have decided with the person who is approaching the end of life that they want to say goodbye on their own terms and not at a time when that medical condition makes a dignified departure impossible. Now, are you saying to them that they shouldn't have the autonomy to make that decision?
Well, you see, I think autonomy is the interesting thing, because once life is taken away, all autonomy is taken away. I mean, we imagine that somehow giving people the right to take their own lives is about giving them autonomy. But, all freedom disappears at the end of life when someone dies. So, if you hasten the end of life, you take away all the freedom that's involved in that time, as I say, of growth and healing that is so often part of terminal illness.
Okay, but before you come to that point, let's say you have a person reaching end of life and they have decided they can't suffer anymore and the family agree with them, with their decision. Are you then turning to them and saying, no, you don't have the right to do this?
Well, you see, I suppose, again, I am, effectively, because I think even leaving aside the vision of faith or what the church specifically teaches, individual autonomy is not absolute. And consideration has to be given to the impact of legislation on the common good, as well as on the individual. And when we legislate for assisted suicide or euthanasia, what's happening is that the state is contributing to undermining the confidence of people who are terminally ill but who want to be cared for and want to live life as fully as possible. In other words, there's this fear that if this is in the law, this could happen. And we've seen this with so many other laws, that once something becomes possible in law, then almost within a very short space of time, it becomes an obligation.
So you're saying to somebody who has decided that they can no longer go through the suffering and the pain, and the family agrees with them, that no, you can't make this choice because of the precedent that it sets?
Well, I mean, nobody can stop somebody else from making a choice. But what we're talking about here with assisted suicide or euthanasia is requiring the active participation of healthcare professionals in taking the lives of the sick.
I mean, you talk about making sure that the end of someone's life is treated with compassion. Now, there will be many people who don't share your viewpoint, who don't share your religious beliefs, who believe that this suggested legislation is an act of compassion. What do you say to them?
Well, I mean, I obviously expect people to disagree with me on a range of things, as I will disagree with them on a range of things. I suppose I don't change my own you know, position of principle, I would have feared somebody else might disagree with me. I mean, as a bishop, as a Christian leader, I suppose my responsibility is to teach what I believe and what the church teaches, and obviously people can accept or reject that. Needless to say, we hope they reject it, because I believe that the gospel is what gives life.
Mm-hmm. We've seen from the recent referendums that people are very respectful, very engaged of carers and the work that they do. Do you think that the church has a greater role to play in perhaps financially supporting the work of carers? Because you spoke about enhanced palliative care there at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, the church's involvement in care over the years has been very significant. I suppose in more recent times, healthcare has been taken over by the state, by the civil authorities, and I think it's important to recognise that religious groups continue to play a part in that, and that. But our role, I think, probably is more to do with the accompaniment of people on the journey of terminal illness. So, in other words, and this is to do with chaplains, parish clergy, and family members who, alongside nurses and doctors, accompany people, sit with them. And, you know, as in my own experience, and just to bring, like, almost the first week or two of my life as a priest, I was teaching in a school, and the school principal said to me, you know, do you know Mrs. Doyle, who cleans your classroom? Her husband is terminally ill, and he's going to die very soon, but she doesn't know. And I hung around the classroom that afternoon to talk to Mrs. Doyle, and she said to me, you know, my husband Harry is dying, but he doesn't know. And here were these two unfortunate people walking on eggshells out of love for one another, because they didn't have, if you like, the skills or the confidence to actually talk to one another about what was going on. And I think, you know, in a sense, that's where the community and you know, the priest can help people sometimes to find that freedom to actually talk to one another. And I think that's part of palliative care.
Yeah, the spiritual side, the pastoral side. Do you think that as we head towards a general election, we don't know when that general election is going to be, of course, that the political parties and groupings that we have seen formed should tell people where they stand on this matter?
Well, I think they should, because in a sense, if people are going to make up their minds to vote for people, you know, obviously they need to know where people stand. Whether people will always say after the election what they said beforehand is another story. I mean, that doesn't just relate to end of life, it relates to all sorts of stuff, because policies can sound very good before an election, but then afterwards, well, that was before the election, you know.
All right, Bishop Kevin Doran, thank you for joining us of Elphin, who's also chair of the Bishop's Council for Life. We'll take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.